You are listening to 90.7 FM KZUU, and this is the PES broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, third floor of the Cub. It's October 10th at about 1 o'clock. KZZU. Let's try that again. KZUU offers free public service announcements just like the ones you just heard. If you need to get the word about your club or event, stop by KZUU office in Cub Room 311. Fill out a PSA form. That's a little bit of a lie. You haven't heard any yet. Here's one that is our PSA. Are you in need of free legal advice? Contact Student Legal Services for a free 30-minute consultation. Visit their office in Cub Room 316 or call them at 335-9539. Well, today on the show, we're going to be talking to Ed Swan from WSU's College of Education. He's a student down there. We're going to talk about the WSU Cougars and their upsetting loss from yesterday's football game. Actually, Saturday's football game. Seahawks, of course, won their game. High school football, former Cougs in sports. More NFL news, intramural sports, and intramural softball. Stay tuned. That, of course, was the favorite of the Peter at the PES. That was the Reverend Horton Heat. In the studio with me, I have Ed Swan. Hello, Ed. Oh, looks like we're not hearing Ed yet. Let's give this another shot. Ed, how about it? Still not hearing it. Okay. Let's throw another song on real quick, and we'll get back to Ed in 1 second. You're listening to the PES on KZUU, and of course, that was the Reverend Horton Heat. All right, Ed, can you hear us now?
I can hear you.
Oh, and I can hear you, too. Good news. Okay. And we should have David on the phone. David, can you hear me?
I can hear you well.
Great. This is going to work. We got everybody up on the air now. Alrighty. The question is, should WSU's College of Education allow conservatives to graduate? In the studio, I have Ed Swan, a 42-year-old college student, father of four, two grandkids. He is he's in the College of Education working on a third career. He was a manager at a potato processing facility for 18 years, and he is currently has a landscaping business, plus he's been attending college for 4 years. He's looking for a career that would be both enjoyable and could help others in the process. Ironically, in this situation, it would be being an attorney. He is a Christian conservative, embraces Christian values. He enjoys archery hunting, fishing, backpacking, riding his dirt bike, camping, working on cars. He and his son are restoring a 1969 Ford 4x4 for his son's senior project in high school. Good old-fashioned family fun is where it's about. And on the phone, once again, is David French from the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, also known as FIRE. David is a native Kentuckian, graduated from David Lipscomb University with honors from Harvard Law School, was a lecturer at Cornell Law School, was most recently a partner at the Greenbaum, Dahl, and McDonald, a 200-lawyer office with offices in Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. For the past 4 years, David has served as Religious Freedom Counsel for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. He was an active member of FIRE's legal network. David was a lead attorney in FIRE's first major public case, a successful defense of freedom of association at Tufts University. He was a lead attorney in FIRE's victory in federal court against the unconstitutional speech code at Shippenburg University. And from the FIRE website, which is www.thefire.org, is a press release dated September 21st, 2005. Education program may have disposition for censorship. Pullman, Washington, September 1st, 2005. A new trend in campus censorship is emerging this summer. Washington State University used dispositions theory to punish an education student for his political and religious expression. The university relented only after the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, FIRE, became involved. Dispositions theory, increasingly in vogue in education programs, requires professors to evaluate their students' commitment to concepts such as social justice and diversity in conjunction with their actual scholastic achievement. Washington State's College of Education threatened 42-year-old student Ed Swan with dismissal for allegedly violating two vague disposition standards. Swan was also subjected to mandatory diversity training, all because of clearly protected speech. Diversity and social justice do not mean the same thing to everyone, remarked David French, president of FIRE. By using such vague and politically charged criteria for evaluating future teachers, colleges all but guarantee that students will be punished for their opinions rather than evaluated on their basis of their abilities. Washington State University's treatment of Swan was providing a chilling example of why dispositions are a concern. When one professor specifically invited him to write what you really feel and to feel comfortable in class, Swan did so. He noted, for example, that he is a conservative Christian, believes that white privilege and male privilege do not exist, and opposed gun control. Swan then received negative evaluations on his dispositions, commanding him to be sensitive to community and cultural norms, appreciate and value human diversity, and show respect for others' varied talents and perspectives, expressly because of his beliefs. These poor evaluations led Washington State to subject Swan to diversity training and ordered him to sign an agreement to abide by all the dispositions to his professors' satisfaction under penalty of dismissal. After FIRE informed Washington State President V. Lane Rollins that this agreement represented an unconstitutional loyalty oath, in this case, loyalty to the university's approved political viewpoints, Washington State quickly agreed to rescind the requirement. It also later agreed not to use dispositions theory in an unconstitutional manner. We are happy that Washington State has agreed to stop misusing the dispositions requirement, French continued, but WSU should abandon such broad and vague standards altogether, as they will certainly lead to future abuses. Swan's case came at a time when Washington State has shown an embarrassing lack of respect for the rights of its students. Its administration continues to refuse to make amends for financing a group of students' disruptive heckling of a controversial play this spring. Responses to open records requests reveal that the university not only financed disruptive heckling, but also helped plan it. FIRE is a nonprofit educational foundation that unites civil rights and civil liberties leaders, scholars, journalists, and public intellects from across all political and ideological spectrum on behalf of individual rights, due process, freedom of expression, academic freedom, and rights of conscience at our nation's colleges and universities. FIRE's efforts to preserve liberty at Washington State University can be viewed at thefire.org/WSU. Alrighty, now that said, David, can you tell us a little bit about the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, the history, the mission, and the goals of the organization?
Well, basically, FIRE was formed because for many years, in fact, now almost 20 years or more, universities have abandoned their mission of providing a marketplace of ideas where people with different viewpoints can get together and discuss and debate the issues of the day in a shared search for truth, but instead have engaged in the creation of a repressive and totalitarian culture with speech codes, things like dispositions theory, etc. FIRE's goal is simple. We want to recreate a marketplace of ideas on campus. So that means we protect the free speech, religious liberty, and freedom of conscience rights of students from across the political spectrum. The politics of a particular student do not matter to us. All that matters is whether they are having their constitutional rights respected. So that's what we do. We defend students from across the political spectrum. We've defended conservative students. We've defended liberal students, conservative professors, liberal professors, all in the interest of trying to make sure that students have and students enjoy their constitutional rights. Unfortunately, what happened in this case is that Washington State University was imposing an ideological orthodoxy, which the state simply can't do.
Okay, that's I think that's a pretty noble cause that FIRE has undertaken, and I think in the case of Ed, I think it's a very good thing, because I actually was in the College of Education here at WSU back in the early 90s, and I experienced firsthand, not quite as bad as what Ed had here, but relatively similar situation. Ed, you said that you don't believe that white privilege and male privilege don't exist anymore. What do you mean? What did you mean when you said that?
We were just talking about the issues of white and male privilege. It was, we focused, maybe a couple of class periods on the issues, and I just brought up that I think in our society we don't we don't see white privilege and male privilege anymore, and you know, simply because of some of the programs that are in place to, you know, to offset some of the privilege that could have existed, you know, many years ago.
Okay, and also, in your opinion, I mean, can you explain why it is or is not important to be sensitive to community and the cultural norm when the College of Education seems to think that you're unable to because you're a conservative Christian?
That's what I hear. I think you can still, to me, I think I can still be a conservative Christian and I can be sensitive to, you know, community and cultural norms.
So I think it's important to note that it's just pure bigotry to believe that someone's ideology by itself renders them insensitive to community and cultural norms. You know, the fact of the matter is that there is a way to test if someone is going to be a good teacher or sensitive to their students, and that's called the student teaching process. The idea that anyone's ideology precludes them from being a good teacher is just ludicrous. So, you know, that's the problem with that criteria. Sensitive to community and cultural norms, what the heck does that even mean? Apparently to them, sensitive to community norms means agreeing with them.
I think you're right about that. And David, what do you know of any other students who have been kicked out or been disciplined in any way because of the disposition since WSU started using them?
Well, I don't know of anyone at WSU, but it's important to note that that does not mean that students have not been punished or that students have been pressured to adopt a party line on these issues, because it's a sad fact that most students don't know their constitutional rights. Mr. Swan is a non-traditional student. He's somebody who's had some life experience in the real world before he came to college, and I think that goes a long way towards vaccinating him against a lot of this college politically correct garbage that is thrown at him. And so therefore he's able to recognize that something that's happened is wrong and then recognize that he may have some rights that can stop it. Whereas a lot of undergrads, they've been exposed to a lot of indoctrination in high school, they get exposed to indoctrination in college, and they don't even realize they have a constitutional right to be free of it. But we are seeing it in some other schools. For example, there's an incident where two students were punished under, or threatened with punishment under dispositions theory in New York when they were protesting that a teacher was calling Ebonics the only good form of English and that standard English was the oppressor's language. When they protested that, saying that's not exactly a helpful way to teach English, they were accused of violating the dispositions criteria in force at the school.
Okay, David, in the Pullman Moscow Daily News, which is the local newspaper that serves the Pullman, Washington, and Moscow, Idaho area, there's a statement in there that said the state requires WSU's College of Education to sign off on each student's good character at graduation. For the past 4 years, a system based on dispositions theory has been in place in the college to evaluate the student's character. Now, what does good character mean? Is that signing off that the person's not a pedophile, or is it signing off that the person's a liberal?
Well, normally, good character means in most circumstances signing off that, say, a person doesn't have a criminal record, hasn't had any record of actual dishonesty, etc. That's, for example, you know, to become a member of a bar, you have to have a character and fitness examination or a character and fitness inquiry to make sure that I'm not a liar, that I don't have a felony record, etc. What apparently they've done here is transform good character from something that's as basic as you know, your felony record and your record of truth-telling to something along the lines of good character means adopting a certain kind of liberal politics. Well, that's an incredibly novel reading of the term good character, and it's one that's completely unconstitutional. It's not the role of the government of the state of Washington to determine that those are of good character or individuals who believe all of this, you know, to believe the politically correct line of the university.
I can't agree more. It's, I guess when I think of good character, I think of somebody who is honest, has integrity, not necessarily somebody who turns a blind eye to all cultural and moral morals that they just pretend that they don't exist, you know, and they'll let anything happen in front of them because, you know, they don't want to be judging of anybody.
Well, another thing I think that's important to note here is all of this social justice and diversity talk ignores what actually should be happening in classrooms. I have no doubt that somebody, given some of the answers that the university's given and some of the officials at the university have given in response to media inquiries, that a person with very different outspoken politics to Mr. Swan would sail through the education department at Washington State. Now let's say they end up being a seventh grade math teacher. Is it appropriate for a seventh grade math teacher to be haranguing his or her students on social justice, or should they be teaching, say, seventh grade math? You know, isn't that the really important job for teachers, to teach their subject well? I did not realize that our modern teachers were supposed to be also pastors in the Church of Political Correctness, teaching our youth all of the right ways to think about race, gender, sex, sexual orientation, war, peace, class, and other other kinds of issues. You know, it seems like the school of education is sort of drunk with ideological power, saying that what we need to be is manufacturing ideological teachers rather than people who actually teach their subject. It's a ridiculous outrage, and as a parent, it's distressing to think that a state university system would be churning out on an assembly line basis a bunch of little ideologues going into the classroom.
That is very true, and I wanted to ask Ed, actually, at this point, what his view of diversity and social justice are and how they relate to the classroom. But before he answers, we're at the bottom of the hour. I need to hit a song, do a couple public service announcements, and we'll come right back to Ed's response to diversity and social justice right here on The PES. You're listening to KZUU. This is The PES, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Cub. Need a place to live? Looking for a roommate? The ASWSU Housing Commission can help. Visit the Housing Commission's website at cub.wsu.edu/hc for a renter's guide to housing listings. They will also place an ad for you for free. For more information, call 335-9574. Support for KZUU comes from Pullman's very own hometown, Deli Heroes and Sports, located on Northeast Kamaikan Street. Heroes and Sports offers a wide variety of sandwiches, salads, and soups. Plus, if you're having an event, Heroes and Sports does catering. So next time you're in need of a sandwich, go to Heroes and Sports, the only hometown deli in Pullman. Alrighty, on the phone with me is David French from the fire organization, and in the booth, or in the studio, is Ed Swan, who is a WSU College of Education student. We ended off with getting ready to find out from Ed's point of view what diversity and social justice mean and how it relates to the classroom. Also, for everybody listening, that was, once again, the Reverend Horton Heat, and I honestly don't know what song that was, so we'll just leave it at that. Hey, actually, real quick, Dave, what did you think about that song?
Actually, it was so loud on the phone that
I
didn't listen to it.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I'll see
you. All right.
Alrighty. Anyway, okay, Ed, what is your view on diversity and social justice, and how does it relate to the classroom?
Well, my view on diversity and social justice, well, diversity, you know, that society is becoming more and more diverse, you know, whether it be cultural or ethnic or racial diversity. And I guess relates to the classroom. You know, we're having these kids come into, you know, future classrooms, and in my college courses, we're learning ways to effectively teach these diverse students. You want me to talk about social justice?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's really something that we haven't, you know, discussed by name, but I know a lot of things that we talk about in school is related to social justice. And one of the times that it was actually brought up by name was in a multicultural class, I think a diversity class. We talked about that you need to educate multicultural students in a way that they can, you know, empower them to make a change so that the society is just. And it's focusing on educating, you know, minority or multicultural students in order to change society in a just way.
Okay. So is that, like David was talking about earlier, is that something you do in the math class when you're in the seventh grade? Or is that more of a social studies class that maybe people who are becoming sociology or world history teachers would actually deal with?
I think you got a point there, but I don't know. We learn different cultural idiosyncrasies, I guess, and are supposed to use them in dealing with, you know, students of different cultures. But, you know, I think it goes way too far. I can see that in some respect, but, you know, I argued in one of my classes, why can't we teach the dominant culture so that we don't have to understand and identify with 32 different cultures and language in order to teach, you know, maybe the one kid that may appear a semester in your class. And I was basically derided in front of the whole class for saying that.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you were able to walk out of that class. So let me play devil's advocate here for a second. So, Mr. Swan, what is the dominant culture that you would want to be teaching our students?
I've heard that. And,
of course.
And really, maybe I'll fall into that trap. It's really hard to explain, you know, one's culture from within. It's hard to notice other cultures on the outside. But, you know, culture is what you do, you know, in your life that gives meaning to your life. And there's a lot of things that encompasses.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about those dispositions, the forms. What exactly is a disposition form? I mean, can you sort of describe what it is and what the purpose of it is? And then why, what things were causing you to fail these disposition forms?
I guess that depends on which one you're looking at. I failed in several different aspects on these forms. I think they're designed to make sure that you're of, you know, the right character to teach students. And there's 10 different dispositions on the form. And some of them, I think, are really, you know, noble qualities and stuff to notice. You know, like for instance, number one is the pre-service teacher contributes to a positive climate. You know, that's always appropriate. But some of the ones that seem like the ones that I always get checked down on are number 6 and 7, and that's being sensitive to community norms. And, you know, community norms, you know, that's different people think different things about community norms, and I guess maybe that's what's getting me into trouble to some extent.
Well, it sounds like they're not being very sensitive to your norms.
Right. it's a very duplicitous on their part, I think. In the university classroom and practicum settings, and practicum settings, I have had nothing but rave reviews in my practicum settings, and you know, I think ultimately that's what should be the deciding factor. You know, student teaching is basically an extension of a practicum setting, is what it is. And anyway, and number 7 is the pre-service teacher appreciates and values human diversity and shows respect for others' varied talents and perspectives. And anyway, those are the two that I usually get checked down on. Sometimes it's more than that.
Okay. So you mentioned that your classmates are surprised by all of this happening. Have they been supportive of you, even the ones who probably highly disagree with you?
Yeah, we occasionally have discussions in class, but they're always, you know, respectful of others' opinions.
Mm-hmm. And are you respectful of their opinions? I mean, do you show it?
I'm always respectful of people's opinion. You know, okay. I think no matter what somebody's opinion is, you can always learn something from them or from their opinion, and I value that. Some of the people that I've talked to and told them about, you know, the troubles I'm having with my PDEs, mm-hmm. are shocked. Actually, they say, "What did you do?" And I said, "Well, you're in class with me. You should know just as much as I do." It's a shock to everyone I've talked to about it.
Okay, and there was a quote that said you seem quote unquote highly intelligent, and that you get good grades at WSU. And my question is that not enough to be a teacher? And also, what do you think that you personally have that you could add to a classroom that maybe somebody, one of the other people, can't?
Well, I think maybe it takes more than intelligence to be a teacher, and I would argue that, you know, I'm not sure how intelligent I am. I'm getting good grades, and I assume that makes a difference. But I think ultimately the practical situations, such as the practicums and the student teaching, are what will decide. But, you know, I think as a someone who has had, you know, 20 years of life experience out in the real world, and raising a family, you know, I got quite a bit to bring into the classroom. You know, I worked at a corporation where I was in management for 18 years, and I trained, you know, literally thousands of people to do jobs, and it required, you know, a lot of interaction with a lot of different people, and to include most of them were minority people.
Okay. So you've been a conservative, or probably in a minority at the College of Education. Now, do you believe that politics even belong in a classroom? Also, do you find it ironic that the College of Education is teaching their students to be understanding, yet they don't seem to be understanding of you?
Yeah, I don't know for sure what to say about, you know, where you draw the line, where to have politics. Obviously, it would be something you would include in a you know, maybe a history or social studies class, something like that. But I don't know how much, you know, how much should be involved in other classes. Should arguably minimal, if any. I don't really know. I've never really thought about that, but it seems to be drug in quite often. And depending on your political stance,
it could definitely cause a disruption to the classroom and alienate students within the classroom when they have a teacher who is more or less forcing their opinion on 30 kids who are captive to them for anywhere from an hour to, depending on the kind of kind of school district anymore that have block scheduling, you could have them for a couple hours and you essentially can be indoctrinating them and definitely could make them feel alienated. So,
you know, to understand the double standards in play here,
mm-hmm.
a lot of these schools of education would believe that if you came into even, say, a seventh grade math class and started talking about social justice and various kinds of multicultural ideas, that would be lauded as a groundbreaking and path-breaking way to teach, a way that is holistic and opens the students' eyes up to the world around them. But if you walked in saying things like the war in Iraq was a good idea or that affirmative action was a bad idea, well, then that would be reactionary and inappropriate and unjust and insensitive. And so, you know, if you believe that your worldview is right and true and its injection into every conceivable scenario is a positive good, then you're going to create a certain kind of school and create a certain kind of teacher. And it appears that at Washington State, they've pretty much decided that they know the right answers to questions of, you know, justice and race and gender and equity and gender and sexual orientation, etc. And that if you're not advancing those right answers, you should be punished. And you know, it. Another thing that's interesting is when it comes to injecting politics into the classroom, if a organization or a set of teachers is used to doing that themselves, in other words, that's the way they teach, it's hard for them to imagine somebody else not doing it. So when they're talking about, you know, training future elementary and secondary school teachers, I'm sure they import their own experience and their own practice into the experience and practices of other teachers. And so that's why when they run across somebody like Mr. Swan, who's not in the cookie-cutter mold that they want, they think that this would be dangerous, because it's almost as if they can't imagine somebody not injecting all of their political opinions into a class.
Right. So do you believe that a good teacher would be one who could teach, and at the end of the semester, if the students were polled to ask whether they feel the teacher was conservative or liberal or socialist or an anarchist or whatever else, do you think that a good teacher would be able to teach the whole entire year and at the end of the year nobody would truly know what the teacher's political affiliation is?
Well, you know, it depends a lot on the kind of class. I mean, it would be hard for me to imagine coming out of a math or biology or a physics class feeling like the teaching was enhanced by any knowledge of the professor's underlying political opinions. Now, I might get to know them if I get to know the teacher as a person, but it's hard for me to imagine that the class would be better off by knowing that somebody's an anarchist or an anti-globalization activist. Now, in history or social studies, if a person used their political point of views as perhaps a springboard for discussion or to inject some interest into the in-class discussion, but at the same time making it clear that agreement with the teacher is not a requirement, or agreement with the teacher should not even be, no one should be feel any pressure to agree with the teacher. I can imagine that that person could be a fantastic teacher. And I've had good teachers in the past where I knew where they stood on these kinds of issues. But the key is that the teacher must make it absolutely clear that their own personal point of view is irrelevant to success in the class. Whereas at Washington State, what the department's apparently doing is making agreement with their particular point of view in these issues a prerequisite for success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely constitutionally offensive.
Right. In the Daily News, Ed was quoted as saying, I asked one of my professors if I should say what I think in class or if I should say more of what they wanted me to say. She said to say what I feel, and he did. And on a personal level, like I said earlier, I was in the College of Education here at WSU in the early 90s. We had a class where we were supposed to, you know, open up ourselves, talk about our prejudices, and you know, get a chance to understand and explore these. You know, the teacher, did the whole, they shut the door and said, okay, this is a closed door situation. Everything you say will stay in this room. It will never leave this room. You can feel totally, feel totally safe saying what you believe. Because the point here is to get those things out and hopefully discuss them and maybe come to a better understanding. And in my situation, I found out that was a lie, because shortly after that meeting and because of other conversations I'd had in class where one of the students and I actually had a discussion over moral relativism and cultural relativism and how that stealing is wrong, and it's always wrong. So there's no relativism about that. And this other student actually tried to argue that, well, there's some societies where stealing is okay, therefore we can't ever say stealing is wrong always. And I was like, come on. And we argued about this for a little bit, and finally she said, okay, let's agree to disagree. The first time I'd ever heard that, and it was frustrating then, and it's even more frustrating now to hear people say that kind of thing. But anyway, the point was is that I get called into this meeting. I was with one of the higher-ups in the department more or less telling me that my political ideology is not going to cut it in the College of Education. Being conservative in the College of Education is not going to be something that's necessarily going to be easily worked out. So my question to you, David, is what would you suggest other students who are conservative do about times when it comes to opening up about their beliefs in the classroom?
Well, I don't think conservative students should hold back at all from their point of view, nor do I think liberal students should hold back in their point of view. I think the marketplace of ideas is the goal. Now, if a conservative student is punished, or a liberal student is punished, or told to keep silent, or told that they better choose a different profession because of their political point of view, the conservative student or liberal student, either one, should do two things. One, they should immediately contact fire@thefire.org. Tell us about this, and we will remind the university of its constitutional obligations not to impose an ideological litmus test. And number two, if the university continues to try to punish you for your point of view, file a lawsuit. Sue the university. These universities need to be punished for imposing these ideological litmus tests. They need to feel financial and public pain for violating the Constitution. It is absurd that these universities continue to impose ideological litmus tests. They're a violation of fundamental rights, and too often get away with it. It's hard to blame the students because, you know, students aren't lawyers. They don't know all of their rights. They don't know that when the state of Washington, acting through its universities, is telling them they need to behave one way, that the state doesn't have that right. But what this radio program and other things that are getting information out there help educate students regarding their rights. The universities need to understand that one of their absolute first obligations to their students is to preserve a marketplace of ideas, to preserve a place where people from all points of view can debate and discuss the issues without being graded down simply because they don't have the ideology the university wants, or not be denied the right to receive a particular degree because they don't have the ideology the university wants. It's not the role of the government to tell you how to think about political or cultural or religious issues. And if they try to do that and enforce it, you need to fight back and fight back hard.
That's good to know. And I think in Ed's situation, him being a non-traditional student, I think and having the real life experience he had and being able to stand up for himself, he was luckily able to. I'm assuming he found you guys.
Right.
And went to you. Unfortunately, you know, at the time that I was going through this, I think I was about 19 or 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, this concept was, I didn't even think about these kind of things there to help me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really intimidated because my chosen major was pretty much telling me that they're not going to let me keep going through if I don't change my attitude.
Well, and also, you know, when you're 19 or 20 years old and all you've known really is school, the prospect of failure in academics or prospect of facing the strong disapproval of teachers and administrators can be very scary, especially when you don't realize that these teachers and administrators are violating the law. So, you know, I don't blame students at all for not knowing it, for not complaining in that event. It takes somebody with a lot of courage and a lot of knowledge to be able to stand up. I blame the administrations for permitting an atmosphere of ideological orthodoxy to persist and to permit censorship and repression. Washington State is being willfully obtuse about this. Not just the issue with Mr. Swan, but also the earlier incident involving a play, The Passion of the Musical,
mm-hmm.
where the university paid for protesters to come heckle the play and eventually threaten the performers with physical harm because the content of a play was offensive to many people. This is an absolute violation of First Amendment rights, and the university just cannot do this.
And I remember that whole issue last spring. We talked about it with I talked about it with some friends of mine and some other people with political leanings both ways, and I was shocked that the university they found university money in a time when, you know, budgets are so tight with everything, that they found money out of one department's budget in order to pay for all these students to go. And I think at the very least the university ought to say, well, you know, your budget obviously isn't doing that poorly if you're able to afford to buy tickets for people to go to a show and disrupt it. And maybe your budget ought to slip down a little bit because you obviously don't need all that extra money we're giving you.
It does seem to be a poor allocation of university resources, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Very, yeah. Very poor allocation. Getting back to Ed here, there's something that was said in the Daily Evergreen about the PDEs that sort of hit a nerve with me. And what was reported was is that one instructor wrote in a letter attached to the PDE that Swan was a white supremacist, that he wore a camouflage hunting cap to class, and he talked about hunting, which both of which alarmed her. And I guess, first off, I think the hat that Mr. Swan is wearing today is the hat that he probably has been wearing. It's a green camouflage hat with some writing on it, and I'm not sure, but most people who go hunting wear orange and not camouflage because they don't want to get shot being mistaken for a deer. So I doubt that's truly a camouflage hunting cap per se, but anyway, the fact that hunting alarms somebody when hunting's been around since, what, the cavemen? You know, the people throughout history have been hunting for food and for livelihood, and to have that be something alarming to her was, I mean, I just find that silly. That part's just silly, that kind of stuff alarms her. But what I found disturbing was the fact that she was willing to write down such a charge of calling him a white supremacist. And I'm just sort of curious, what were your thoughts when you actually read that?
It bothered me a little, of course, because for one, I have four biracial children, and the majority of my friends are of an ethnic minority. And so, you know, I know it's not true, but sometimes when you try to prove something otherwise, it makes you look worse. So.
Right. You can't prove a negative. You can't prove a negative. So you're sort of stuck in that situation.
And if you're talking about a person whose perspective of reality is so warped that the knowledge that someone hunts is frightening, you wonder how much reason and sense can be talked into a person like that. You know, when you read things like that, you begin to realize that the academic bubble is really something pretty amazing. If someone can learn that another individual is a hunter and then be frightened by that, it's frankly astonishing. But, well, I have to take that back. It's astonishing if I didn't know anything about the university culture. Knowing what I know about the university culture, it's pretty predictable. I can remember when I was in law school, I was talking with a group of my friends about some of our first jobs that we ever had. And the first job I ever had when I was in high school, was working at a Walmart selling guns. And you would have thought that I had said my first job was massacring kittens. They looked at me as if I had just grown horns and a tail. But, you know, this is sort of the contemporary academic environment, so insulated from real life, that the revelation that somebody likes to hunt is an earth-shattering and terrifying experience.
That's crazy. It looks like you guys said you'd be here till about 2 o'clock. We got about 5 more minutes, give or take. Just like to close up with a couple things for on David's side, and then I'll give Ed a chance to say any last thoughts that he has. David, you said the standards on WSU's PDEs are becoming more common across the nation because they flow from language and accreditation organizations.
Yeah.
Have there been other issues at other schools with students because of these dispositions?
Well, yes. There's been other at Brooklyn University in New York. There's been issues. There may be some emerging issues at the University of Alabama that we're investigating. It appears that these disposition standards are far more widespread than we first thought. So what we're trying to do right now is educate students that to pay attention to these dispositions, to evaluate them, and to make sure that they're not being used to force them into an ideological cookie cutter, and especially to make sure that those dispositions aren't being applied in a way that violates the fundamental religious liberties of students. I'm looking right now at a paper by a education teacher at the University of Alabama talking about the heteronormative subjectivities of Christian pre-service teachers, where biblical Christianity is a form of oppression. Well, while he's free to argue that, certainly, the question is, does he translate that belief into negative action against Christians in the classroom? And I think that's an answer worth knowing.
Right. Okay, and now, as far as these dispositions go, would you like to see them go away altogether, or do you think there's a place for them at WSU, and what alternatives would you like to see, if any?
Well, you know, already students are evaluated as to whether they're effective teachers in practicum settings, in student-teacher settings. And one of the things that, you know, you're evaluated as part of effective teaching is, do you have a rapport with the students? Are you able to have effective discipline, et cetera? And all of those things aren't necessarily objective grading factors, but instead are, for lack of a better word, some form of disposition. But none of them have anything to do with ideology. It's easy to rewrite a dispositions form to eliminate the ideologically vague terms. Mm-hmm. Is somebody honest? Do they have good classroom management skills? Do students respond to them well? Do students learn the subject matter when they're being taught by the teacher? All of these things go into determining whether someone's a good teacher, and they have nothing to do with their ideology. Somebody can believe somebody can be a young earth creationist and teach math. Somebody could be a Noam Chomsky worshiping leftist and teach biology, or teach social studies or history without injecting their personal beliefs into the classroom. The issue is, how do you perform in class, and how well do you know your subject? It's not what are your inner thoughts and what's your view on how to end racial discrimination in the United States.
right? Or whether you wear a hunting cap to your College of Education classes.
Well, I don't know. You know, the hunting cap is pretty scary.
Well, yeah. And I was just, you know, thinking about all the other things that I see people wearing around campus today. And if the hunting cap is as bad as he gets, we're doing pretty darn good with that.
Well, you know, I wonder if there's ever been a woman to walk into the education classes dressed immodestly. Does that mean that they will, you know, show up in a bikini in high school classes? You know, it's absurd. Of course, people dress differently in, as a student than they would in a professional setting. And to judge someone on the basis of their baseball cap is just ludicrous.
Very true. And now, as far as fire goes, you know, Ed's not going to be here forever, of course. And, you know, the College of Education will be much long after he's gone. Is FIRE going to keep some sort of eye on the WSU College of Education and make sure that other students don't go through the same indignity that Ed has gone through so far?
We will try, but we will need the students at Washington State University to help us. We simply don't have the resources to have people on the ground at campuses across the country.
Sure.
So during this, we hope to use this incident to educate other students at WSU to keep an eye on Washington State and to report to us if there's any further violations.
Have you guys been contacted by the Daily Evergreen, which is the school newspaper?
Not on the, I can't remember. I know we have about the issue of the Passion of the Musical, and yeah. I don't recall about this issue.
I don't recall seeing it in the Evergreen. Ed, was it in there at all?
Not yet.
Not yet. Have they contacted you?
Yes, I'm meeting with them shortly, actually.
Oh, great. Okay, that's good. I'm glad to hear that it's going to get out, because in the Pullman-Moscow Daily News, it gets out to the community at large, but I don't think that newspaper is read by the number of college students that the Evergreen is read by. So having it in the Evergreen, I think, would be a great place to talk about and get really out to the students and make them understand the kind of issues that Ed has gone through and about the organization that FIRE is and what they can do to help students out in situations where, you know, Ed was helped out. And, you know, David, I really appreciate your time for coming on the show. I appreciate the fact that you and your organization are willing to step up for people like Ed. And if I had known about you back in the day, I might have contacted you myself. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate Ed for having the courage to say that this is wrong and to contact somebody for help, because it does take some bravery to do that.
Yes. And Ed, let me end with you. Go ahead and say whatever you'd like to say about your experiences with FIRE, your experiences with College of Education, maybe what your future plans are, if you plan on staying in the College of Education and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm just about done here, actually. I'll be done in another month of instruction, and I have student teaching. I'm glad FIRE stepped in, for one, certainly. And I just, anybody that's listening, you know, I want to tell them, you know, hold true to your convictions, because I'm kind of upset with myself because it seemed like I kind of abandoned some of my convictions just to kind of stay out of trouble a little bit, and it actually didn't work at all anyway. So, you know, hold true to your convictions and realize that you have rights.
All right, thank you. And here's Reverend Horton Heat. You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower on the third floor of the Cub. Our studio line is 509-335-2207. You can get us on the website at www.kzuu.org. And the PES's website is thepes.com. First hour, we had a Wiki Banter, and we discussed more specifically Ed Swan and the College of Education and the disposition theory reports that they're using to determine whether students should or should not be able to graduate or remain in the College of Education. This hour, we'll talk sports. We got WSU Cougar football. We will not dwell on that too long because I just don't want to talk about it. We got high school football, former Cougs in sports, NFL and the Seahawks, intramural sports, and intramural softball, all coming up. Welcome back to the PES. I promised a little bit of WSU Cougar football action, and here it is. The Cougs lost 24-21 to Stanford. I really wish they hadn't lost. A couple interceptions that hopefully wouldn't have been thrown. Alex Brink, 161 yards, 13 for 26. One positive bright note, Jerome Harrison, 29 carries for 218 yards. One touchdown. Too bad he didn't have two or three. That might have been the difference in the game. But the Cougs will be back. Actually, no, I'm going to talk about the Cougs a little bit now because I just remembered a friend of mine made me very frustrated on Friday night when we were at the Pullman Greyhound game. The Pullman Greyhounds, I will talk about them in a little bit, but they did some spanking on Riverside. Anyway, this quote-unquote friend of mine who has WSU license plates, WSU Cougar head tattooed on him, taught his son how to say go Cougs and all that kind of stuff. He thinks the Cougars' only opportunity to win a game for the rest of the season was last Saturday at Stanford, with Stanford in town. He thinks we're going to lose out from here. And I said, you're a fan? You think we're going to lose out from here? And you're a fan? No, you're not a fan. You're nothing close to a fan. You are a Husky. Yes, I went there. I said it. You're a Husky. You bleed purple. You are worthless. You are scum. You would never be a Cougar fan and say the Cougs are going to lose the rest of their games because that is not a Cougar fan. No, sorry. Go away. You're a Husky. Don't claim to be a Cougar fan. Don't try to bleed crimson when you bleed purple. Okay, I've said it. I've been there. I'm gone. Moving along to the NFL. Monday tonight, the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be playing the San Diego Chargers. Hopefully, Tomlinson, I'm hoping like crazy that he doesn't have a wonderful game. I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from the man, but if he gets 9 points in my, if he gets 10 points in my fantasy football league, I'll lose the football game. So I really can't have that happen. And now on to real things. New England over Atlanta, 31-28. Cleveland over Chicago, 20-10. Former Seahawk Trent Dilfer playing for Cleveland, 218 yards. The Green Bay Packers break out of their 0-4 slump, thrashing on the New Orleans Saints, 52-3. Brett Favre was on fire. And that's good, too, because he's also on my fantasy football team. New York Jets over Tampa Bay, 14-12. Indianapolis, they did a little bit of a crushing. Not quite as good as the crushing Green Bay put on New Orleans, but New England, or Indianapolis 28 over San Francisco's 3. The Denver Broncos 21. Washington 19. Now that was a little bit of a close game. Well, the score shows it was close. The only thing that I'm happy about is that Denver was my horse in this week's horse race. And it won. Unfortunately, 6 other people chose Denver. So, you know, by Denver winning, there's 6 other people still in contest. And a couple other people chose other horses, and one of those horses failed, so there's 9 people left. And remember, this is a $20 per horse. You choose one NFL team that's going to win each week. Once you've chosen that team, you can't pick them again all season long. Winner takes all situation. We have $680 in the pot. I have 9 people left to get through in order for me to take that money home, and boy, do I need it. Jacksonville over Cincinnati, 23-20. Buffalo over Miami, 20-14. Baltimore loses to the Detroit Lions, 17-35. And the Seahawks, 37 St. Louis, 31. Bulger for the St. Louis Rams, 336 yards in a losing effort. That's almost like throwing, 500 yards in a losing effort. Not quite even close, but yeah, it still sucks. Tennessee 34, Houston 20, Dallas 33, Philadelphia 10. Drew Bledsoe in that Dallas game, 289 yards passing. The Carolina Panthers 24, Arizona 20, and Kansas City, Oakland, Minnesota, and New York Giants all enjoying their bye week. NFL sports. Flag Football League, sign-ups are tomorrow and Wednesday. Play starts on October 16th. Cost is $30 per team. There's also a flag football scramble to go along with that. The registration is October 11th and 12th, same time as the registration for the Football League. The play, however, is on October 13th, which is a Thursday, and it's free to participate. Dodgeball! Yeah, I'm going to be playing dodgeball. Yeah, the league sign-up is... Actually, I'm not going to tell you what it is, because you'll go there and steal my time, so you're just going to have to look that one up for yourself, and don't steal my time. But there is a scramble. I'll tell you about that one. It's on October 13th as well. That's free. I'd like everybody to sign up for that, because it would be sort of fun to play a whole bunch of games and beat up on a whole bunch of people. Racquetball tournament. Registration is from today through the 20th. Plays on the 21st. $2 for singles and $4 for doubles is the cost to play racquetball. There's a volleyball league. Sign-ups are October 18th and 19th. Play begins on October 23rd. It's $30 per team. There is a volleyball scramble that is on the 20th. It's free, and the sign-ups for that is also on the 18th and 19th. There's 3-on-3 basketball. Sign-ups are on October 18th and 19th. Play begins on October 23rd. It's $20 per team. Billiards. Sign-ups October 17th through the 27th. Play is on the 29th. $2 for singles, $4 for doubles. And now, Cougs in sports. Drew Bledsoe, we talked about him a second ago, with the Cowboys. 24 of 35 for 289 yards and 3 touchdowns, leading the Cowboys to victory. Eric Coleman with the New York Jets, 4 tackles, 3 assists. James Darling with the Cardinals, 2 tackles. Devard Darling did not see any play time with the Ravens this week. Jason David with the Colts, 1 interception return for 13 yards and 3 pass deflections. Steve Gleason didn't get any play time with the Saints. Maybe if he had, they would have beat up on Brett Favre a little bit. Jason Hansen with the Lions, 5 for 5 on extra points, no attempted field goals. Ryan Lindell, he's with the Bills, was 2 for 2 on field goals with a 47-yarder and perfect on extra point attempts. Ryan Long with the Titans, 2 sacks against Houston. Rob Meyer with Jacksonville had 1 tackle. Ronald Smith with the Vikings had a bye. Lamont Thompson with the Titans, 2 tackles, 1 assist. And last, but certainly not least, Marcus Trufant with the Seahawks. 2 tackles, 2 pass deflections. Alrighty, Pullman High School Greyhounds. They're undefeated this year, and they're 6-0 overall. They're 2-0 in the Great Northern League. They go and thrash Riverside, 62-7. Pullman got on the board 11 seconds into the game with a fake reverse, went 84 yards for the touchdown. The Greyhounds gave up 7 yards passing and -1 yard rushing in the first half of the game. That's right, a total of 6 combined yards given up by the Pullman High School defense in the first half of the game. And Riverside is supposed to be one of the teams competing for second place in the league. The Pullman Greyhounds did not allow Riverside to get a first down until the fourth quarter of play. And by that time, the Pullman High School cheerleaders were in the game. Okay, I'm joking about that. They had their backup players in the game, but Pullman High School defense and offense were fabulous during the game, and they do what they always do. They go out there and they run their game. They do their game plan. If they score, they score. They're not going to start letting up until the second half, until the games. Then they put in all their second stringers. They give I'm sure some third stringers were out there getting play time in this game. And they don't run up the score. They did score a touchdown in the second half, but it was a backup sophomore junior varsity player who was in who scored a touchdown on a long run. The Riverside team didn't make the tackle on him, so you can't really blame the guy. It's not like he's going to stop at the 1 yard line and not go in. I'm sorry. I mean, he's playing a varsity game, scored his first touchdown. I think that's pretty cool for him. But when you look at the last 2 Great Northern League games, Riverside Deer Park, the Pullman has outscored them 111-14. They've allowed a touchdown in each game, and that's it. And those touchdowns are both allowed when their second and third stringers are in. They're starting off defense if they stay the whole game, and they're starting offense if they stay the whole game. I have no doubt in my mind that these games would be 100-0 without question. So, including the non-league games, there's a spread of 259 Greyhound points to 64 for all the opponents combined. The next game for Pullman is against Lakeside. In the game, running back J.C. Sherritt rushed 8 times for 173 yards, while his teammate Mike Thomas rushed 7 times for 98 yards. And quarterback JT Levenseler was 4 for 7 with 118 yards passing. Congratulations to the Pullman High School Greyhounds. I'm not reporting on the Colfax Bulldogs or the Liberty High School Patriots. Unfortunately, both teams lost, and we don't want to dwell on losses in this show. So for now, let's hear audio files.